It is the duty of the international community to do something about it, to take measures to bring the violence to an end, to take measures to ensure accountability.
More unrest and death in Myanmar. It's Thursday, March 18th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, U.S. engages Asian allies. New Asia travel opens. Unknown effects of COVID. Eco-friendly tech. A second life for Japanese sea slugs. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A high-ranking council of Buddhist monks in Myanmar says it is suspending all activities amid the military junta's escalating and deadly crackdown on anti-coup demonstrators. The 47-member Mahana issued a statement Wednesday calling for an end to the violence, according to the news outlet Myanmar Now. The government-appointed body also called for the immediate end to arrests of unarmed civilians. The unrest that has plagued Myanmar since the military's overthrow of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi is entering its 45th day. Plumes of smoke rose over an industrial area of the main city of Yangon, which has become a key battlefield in the nationwide protests against the February 1st military coup. Much of the city was placed under martial law after deadly rioting over the weekend. The advocacy group Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, which has been tracking the violence, says more than 200 protesters have been killed in the unrest. The group says the death toll from rioting Sunday had reached 74, making it the bloodiest day of demonstrations against the junta. Pope Francis also called for an end to the bloodshed in Myanmar Wednesday, after the end of his weekly general audience at the Vatican. Human rights officials are expressing alarm at the soaring death toll in Myanmar as the military junta's security forces intensify their brutal crackdown on protesters. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The past week has been particularly deadly. The UN Human Rights Office says 11 people were killed on Monday and 57 over the weekend by security forces that used live ammunition against peaceful protesters. Since February 1st, when Myanmar's military toppled the democratically elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi, the UN agency confirms at least 149 people have been killed, though it says it believes the number of deaths to be much higher. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says her agency continues to receive distressing reports of people being arbitrarily arrested, forcibly disappeared, and brutally beaten and tortured while in detention. By last count, she says, more than 2,084 people remain arbitrarily detained.
At least 37 journalists have been arrested, of whom 19 remain in arbitrary detention. At least 5 deaths in custody have occurred in recent weeks, and at least 2 victims' bodies have shown signs of severe physical abuse, indicating that they were tortured.
A day after Sunday's deadly crackdown on protesters, Myanmar's military authorities declared martial law in a number of townships in and around Yangon and Mandalay. That means military law now will apply to civilians, subjecting offenders to military tribunals that give them no right of appeal. Many countries and human rights activists have been calling for economic sanctions and an arms embargo on Myanmar's military coup leaders. Shamdasani dismisses Myanmar's claims that under international law, countries have no right to interfere in its internal affairs. She says that is an argument often raised by countries where serious human rights situations are occurring.
Where the state fails to protect the human rights, or where the state is carrying out human rights violations against its own people, it is the duty of the international community to do something about it, to take measures to bring the violence to an end, to take measures to ensure accountability. You cannot argue non-interference when you are shooting your own people.
Human rights officials are calling on the military to stop killing and detaining protesters. UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is appealing to all those with influence to take measures to bring an end to the state violence against the Myanmar people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. why Myanmar's junta might give brief reprieve to embattled Muslim minority. First, virtual meeting between Biden and China's Xi Jinping could be April's climate summit. Japanese court says official ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional. Beijing critics praise British envoy they once faulted. China to raise retirement age to offset funding shortfall. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found online at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also check out the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin warned of unprecedented challenges by North Korea and China during the second stop on a tour meant to reinvigorate Washington's Asia alliances. Austin's comments came after he landed Wednesday in South Korea, along with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We're united in the vision of a free and open Indo-Pacific region, where countries follow the rules, cooperate whenever they can, and resolve their differences peacefully. And in particular, we will push back if necessary when China uses coercion or aggression to get its way.
The two men were previously in Tokyo. This is the first major diplomatic trip by senior Biden administration officials, underscoring a desire to rejuvenate alliances White House officials say were strained during the previous Trump administration. In Tokyo, Austin and Blinken repeatedly focused on threats posed by North Korea and China. Meanwhile, North Korea has issued new threats against the United States and South Korea. Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of ruler Kim Jong-un, said in an official media statement, the two allies could face consequences for conducting annual joint military exercises. We hear more from Jason Strother reporting from Seoul.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin wrapped up security talks Tuesday in Tokyo. They met with Japan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Toshimitsu Motegi, and Defense Minister Nobuo Kishi. During a press event, Secretary Blinken said Washington has tried reaching out to Pyongyang but has received no response.
As you know, the North Korea policy is under review. We're looking at whether various additional pressure measures could be effective, whether there are diplomatic paths that make sense. All of that is under review, and it's under review in close consultation with our allies and partners.
In Seoul, North Korea's nuclear weapons program is high on the agenda. Blinken and Austin are also trying to reaffirm a counterbalance to China's influence in the region. The defense secretary says Beijing's increased aggression in disputed waters is a threat to both the U.S. and Japan.
I know Japan shares our concerns with China's destabilizing actions. And as I have said before, China is a pacing challenge for the Department of Defense. And we know that competing in today's shifting global dynamics can only be done through the spirit of teamwork and cooperation, which are the hallmarks of our alliance with Japan.
Foreign Minister Motegi says Tokyo's position on China is the same as Washington's. We agree to oppose China's unilateral bid to change the status quo in the East China Sea and the South China Sea, Motegi said. A recent White House strategy paper named China as the biggest threat to America's interests. Robert Dujaric, co-director of the Institute for Contemporary Asian Studies at Temple University's Tokyo campus, tells VOA that strengthening partnerships in the Pacific is one way to put pressure on China.
Beijing would prefer the relationship between the U.S., Japan, and South Korea to be bad because they don't want their adversaries to work closely together, but there's not much they can do.
But Washington is leaving the door open for dialogue with Beijing. Following talks in South Korea, Secretary Blinken will depart for Anchorage, Alaska, to meet with senior Chinese foreign policy officials. Jason Strother for VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, authorities in the U.S. state of Georgia arrested a man late Tuesday after a series of shootings that left 8 people dead, 6 of them Asian women. South Korea's foreign ministry said 4 of the victims were of Korean descent. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're spending part of your day with us on VOA Asia. Australia is working on an ambitious plan to establish Singapore as a COVID-19 quarantine getaway and potential vaccination hub for returning Australians, international students, and business travelers. From Sydney, Phil Mercer tells us more.
The deal with Singapore could allow passengers en route to Australia to satisfy strict biosecurity rules before arrival. Ministers hope the proposal with the Southeast Asian city would help about 40,000 Australians stranded overseas return home, boost tourism, and revive the multi-billion dollar market for international students at Australian universities, which has been badly hit by border closures. It's a year since Canberra, Australia's capital, barred most foreign travellers in an attempt to curb the spread of COVID-19. The ban has recently been extended until at least June. Australian Deputy Prime Minister Michael McCormack says the government is preparing to restart international travel.
We're also making sure that the planes are going to be ready. You can't just roll a plane out of a hangar and stick it back on an international route. We're working with Singapore at the moment, potentially for a bubble in July. And these are positive signs. And as the vaccine rolls out, not only in Australia but in other countries as well, we'll reopen more bubbles.
Under the plan, Australians would be allowed to fly to Singapore without government approval, provided they've been vaccinated against COVID-19. Also, Singaporeans who've been inoculated would be permitted to travel to Australia without having to undergo 2 weeks of hotel quarantine. Australia has given travellers from New Zealand similar concessions, but authorities in Wellington have yet to reciprocate to allow entry to Australians. Australian citizens can return home from overseas, but they face mandatory quarantine. Thousands of people have been left stranded because of limited capacity in secure hotels. Australia has recorded just over 29,000 COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. 909 people have died, according to the health department. There have been four key parts to the nation's coronavirus strategy: restrictions on international travel, strict lockdowns, sophisticated contact tracing, and mass testing. A nationwide vaccination program began last month. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian said during a daily news briefing that Myanmar should take concrete and more vigorous measures to ensure the safety of Chinese citizens and companies there. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, last March, when the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic, it had already proved to be lethal and highly contagious. It was a new virus with many unknowns, and since then, scientists have learned a lot about how it affects vital organs and its long-term effects. VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
COVID-19 is a respiratory disease caused by a virus, officially known as SARS-CoV-2. Short for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus 2. It's the second time a coronavirus has sickened people and caused death. SARS first appeared in China in November 2002. The current version of the virus emerged from China in 2019, which is why it's called COVID-19. The virus invades the lungs. It multiplies and neutralizes the molecules that help us fight infection. Most people recover, but the virus can damage the lungs and leave patients gasping for air. Thomas Steele needed a double lung transplant because of COVID.
It's nothing like sitting in your hospital room, gasping for every breath air you take. And I did that for 58 days.
The lungs pass oxygen into the bloodstream, and the virus can damage the lungs and make the oxygen levels fall. Patients may need to be put on a ventilator to help them breathe. COVID-19 can also cause dangerous clotting in the bloodstream. People who already have damaged blood vessels from high blood pressure or stroke, and those with heart disease, have a higher risk of serious disease. These clots can form throughout the body, including in the lungs and the heart. The clotting can cause heart attack or stroke. Dr. Alan Anderson is one of many cardiologists who saw people with healthy hearts suffer heart damage.
They had elevations of blood enzyme markers that were consistent with a heart attack, even though they didn't have any blockages in their coronary arteries. They had heart rhythm disturbances, and that this occurred with quite high prevalence.
The virus and the inflammation that accompanies it can damage the heart tissue, and some of the damage can be reversed, but some cannot. Doctors have also learned that the virus can damage another vital organ, the kidneys. A large New York medical system looked at more than 5,000 COVID patients last year. Their findings?
Of the 5,449 patients, 36.6% of them developed acute renal failure or kidney injury. Of the ones that got kidney injury, 14% required dialysis.
Scientists are still studying the impact of COVID-19 on the body, but the most severe effects start with the lungs. Damaged lungs have a harder time getting oxygen to the bloodstream, and organs need oxygen to function. If there is none, they can fail. The lungs, the heart, the kidneys, and the liver. And then there are the long-term consequences of the disease. Some are not life-threatening, but can affect the quality of life. Symptoms may include persistent fatigue, headache, shortness of breath, or chest pain. Others may experience brain fog or memory issues, and still others have lingering feelings of anxiety and depression. Anyone, not just those who are hospitalized, can have long-term symptoms, and there's no way to tell who will be affected.
We don't really know right now how many patients will develop these long COVID symptoms after they have had this infection. Studies look at anywhere between 10% and 80%. So there could be a large number of people who are experiencing symptoms well after, again, that four-week time period when we expect people to normally recover.
Some medical centers have started special clinics to treat the long haulers, people whose symptoms persist even after they have recovered from COVID. Others may not be long haulers, but their lives have changed drastically because of COVID-19.
I'll never be the same person for the rest of my life.
He is one of many who will never be the same because of COVID-19. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam confirmed two U.S. consulate staffers in the city tested positive for COVID-19 and were admitted to a local hospital for treatment. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, a growing number of companies are making products with the environment in mind. VOA's Julie Tabo learned about an item finder made from ocean trash.
If you're one of those people who are always losing track of your personal belongings, the Chipolo Bluetooth-based item finder is designed to help. It works when Chipolo is attached to an item like a wallet or a backpack. When you connect it via Bluetooth to the Chipolo app on your phone, you can search for your missing item by opening the app and tapping Ring to Find, and the object will start to ring.
Ring the remote.
Sure. But Chipolo is in a crowded market with Tile and other competitors, including Samsung. It's found a way to stand out, though, with its Chipolo One Ocean Edition, made from trash found in the ocean. specifically recyclable fishing nets.
Our products are made of plastic, and even though they are very small and we are not contributing like a lot of plastic consumption, we still felt that we should be environmentally responsible and conscious.
With the help of Oceanworks, an organization that aims to rid the world of plastic waste, the recovered plastic is pulled from shallow waters and turned into pellets to create the outside casing.
By incorporating ocean plastics into their product, it really sends a message to not only consumers, but other businesses that, like, really anything is possible and you can start small and have really big results.
Chipolo also recently donated $10,000 to Oceanic Global, a nonprofit organization that supports ocean cleanup efforts.
On average, a plastic item takes between 500 and 1,000 years to break down. That's why it's so important that companies like Chipolo are finding innovative ways of actually using this existing plastic.
Harmful plastic trash in our oceans and seas is growing at an alarming rate. Single-use plastic products, as well as plastics found in lost and abandoned fishing gear, make up about 70% of all marine litter, according to the International Solid Waste Association. Companies are tapping into these concerns. Adidas has a shoe line from Ocean Plastics. The carpeting in an upcoming SUV, the Fisker Ocean, also comes from recovered ocean plastics and fishing rope. In the meantime, Chipolo is feeling good about the small contribution it's making to a large global problem.
We are not just selling a product that's made out of the recycled fishing nets, but we are also spreading awareness about the ocean pollution itself. So maybe we are also encouraging other companies to start thinking about it and also make products that are made out of the recycled plastic instead of the virgin materials.
Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Researchers in Japan recently discovered that some sea slugs can regrow their bodies. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports that studying these slugs may one day help answer questions about our own health.
In this lab in Nara, Japan, scientists say they've made a discovery that could one day shape research into the human body's ability to regenerate. Scientist Saya Mito says she was studying the effects of photosynthesis on a breed of sea slug when an accident happened.
Then, one day, one of the sea slugs was found decapitated by chance. We kept it as it was until the regeneration started. That's the process of discovery. So I think it's fair to say that this was purely by accident.
Mito replicated the chance decapitation by loosely tying string around a slug's neck and using it to separate the head and body. Professor Yoichi Yusa says the slug's head regrew a body, a process that reportedly took less than 3 weeks.
Some animals can autotomize their legs or appendages or tails, but no other animal shed their whole body. So we think this is a most extreme case.
Researchers found this breed of sea slug took about a week to regrow its heart, which circulates blood and conveys oxygen. The study involved decapitating 16 slugs. Six started regeneration and three of them lived full slug lives. One slug even regrew its body twice. But Yusa says the research on how this might affect our species, if at all, is far off.
But we can learn the mechanisms of regeneration from the sea slugs and may use such information for human medical sciences. But that's a long way. And we need much study to understand the mechanisms.
Researchers think the species developed the ability to regenerate to fight off parasites in its bodies. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
We've slugged our way to the end of another program. We'll regenerate again at this time tomorrow. We hope you can join us. In the meantime, follow us online at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Look us up under our name, VOA Asia. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.